We're going back to school again for this episode of the show. A little school over in Durham called Duke. Welcome to the NC Everything Podcast. I'm your host, Curtis, and this is the bi-weekly show where I talk about everything that has anything to do with North Carolina. Thank you all for joining me for episode 115. Really, I can't believe I've done this 115 times. I mean, it may seem like a small accomplishment, but for me, it's a big thing. When I first had the idea about this show, I was wondering if I would have enough content to put together a long-term show. I wasn't sure if I could even think of 115 things to talk about in North Carolina. But I've learned a whole lot along the way. Like I always say, I put together this show, but I don't know this stuff by heart. I have to do my own research, and I've learned a lot along the way, and I hope all of you have too. So again, thank you all for listening. Now, before we go to the content, let's talk about the extras. And when I say extras, of course, I mean extra NC Everything. Check out the links in the description below. You'll find a link to the official NC Everything Podcast Facebook group. You'll also see a YouTube link for all you podcast listeners who want to put a face behind the voice. You'll see a link for the YouTube channel. And there's also a link to Tasting NC, a YouTube show I do with my wife where we taste everything that has anything to do with North Carolina. And my favorite link in the description is the contact button. I say that all the time. If you have an idea for a show or you just want to reach out and say hello, you can email me at thenceverythingpodcast@gmail.com. And speaking of contact, this episode was suggested by Ricky from Chapel Hill. Thank you, Ricky, for suggesting Duke University. Now, let's get to the content. So Duke University, as a school, is pretty old. Not as old as UNC, and I know there's a rivalry there. I won't get into the UNC-Duke rivalry in this episode. Sorry, guys. But it's not as old as UNC, but it is, as a school, an old school. But Duke University, the name, was created in 1924. But we're not there yet. Let's back up to 1838. There was this little bitty preparatory school in Randolph County called Brown's School. And the original site for Brown's School is actually in the town of Trinity, which is just south of Archdale. I don't believe I've ever been through Trinity. I'm actually not sure if I've ever been through Archdale, to be honest. But anyway, the school, the Brown School, was organized by the Union Institute Society. Yep. A group of Methodists and Quakers under the leadership of Reverend Brantley York. And so the Union Institute Society, they create Brown School, but it wasn't long before Brown School changed their name to Union Institute Academy. And this was 1841, so about 3 years after Brown's School started, it got the name change. Well, it wasn't long that the school, it started expanding. A lot of kids were coming, and they needed help. And back then, they had all these slaves around, and so they started putting slaves to work as staff and faculty at the school. Well, then in 1851, the name changed again. It was changed to Normal College, and it wasn't a college for normal people. I don't even know if that's a thing. If you remember from some of my past episodes about schools and some of these history shows, a normal school was a school that taught teachers how to teach, is the basic way to put it. So the school went from a preparatory school for boys to a school for instructors and teachers. And this normal school, it went on for about 8 or 9 years, but then in 1859, it kind of hit rock bottom. The money dried up. The school was having a lot of financial trouble. And so they looked to the Methodist Church for help. And the Methodists, they were all too happy to help, but they had some stipulations. One, if the Methodist Church offered money to keep the school open, they wanted to be able to send pastors and preachers to this school for free. And the college, or I guess normal school, it agreed to let pastors and people of the cloth attend the school for free. The other part of it, I'm not sure if the church wanted this or the school just decided, but they changed the name from Normal School to Trinity College. And from here, the school, the names change a little bit, but the school starts adding more programs and building up from there. And keep in mind, right now, they're still over in Randolph County. But in the early 1880s, somewhere around the 1880s, they started the Cherokee Industrial School at Trinity College. And on the surface, the Cherokee Industrial School, it sounds like, oh, they're trying to help the Native Americans. Not really. Some of you may know this, but there was this big push to get the Native out of the Native Americans. They wanted to westernize them is what they call it. So the idea is you send all these Native boys, mostly from the Cherokee tribe, you send all these Native boys over to the school and help them, you know, forget how to hunt, live off the land, all their Native culture, all their the stuff they learn. You're going to get away from that, and we're going to teach you how to live like white people do, essentially. And that's what this Cherokee Industrial School is all about. And maybe they were teaching them some industry there too. I have no idea. But the main goal was to educate the Native out of them. Now, that didn't really last too long either. As some of you know, the Civil War, it came and it went. The slaves were freed, so there goes all that free help. And then, of course, to be blunt, after the Civil War ended and the slaves were free, the next order of business for the U.S. government was to get rid of them pesky Natives. And so a bit of a Indian extermination campaign ramped up. And we don't call it Indian extermination because that doesn't really fit our narrative. But I can tell you, General Custer didn't die up there at Little Bighorn because he was trying to educate Native Americans. He was trying to get rid of them. Anyway, let's get back on track here. Right around this time, the current manager of Trinity College, his name was Braxton Craven. Well, he dies, and they get a new manager. He was a New York native from John Crowell, and he was a Yale graduate. Well, as soon as he takes over the school, the first thing he notices, this school is out in the country. It's in the middle of nowhere, and that's not going to help build the school, in his opinion. And he was right. So he wants to find a better place to move Trinity College. And so he brings this idea to the trustees of Trinity College, and they agree that, you know, if we want to bring in more students and more money, we need to get out of the country and into the city. And so I read that there was a kind of a competition between a bunch of cities in central North Carolina. I didn't catch which cities the competition was involved. But anyway, as you know, Durham, or the city, not the county, the city of Durham won. And so Trinity College moves to Durham in 1892. Now, another thing that helped Trinity College make it to Durham, you know, at the end of the day, it's about money. If you want to survive, you need money. And there's this guy in Durham named Washington Duke. And if you listen to my episode on NC Tobacco, you'll learn more about Washington Duke. He was I don't know if you would call him a tobacco magnate. Is that right? But he made a killing off tobacco. He wasn't the only one, but there were several. But he was a tobacco millionaire, essentially. And, you know, money talks, and there was a lot of money in Durham because of tobacco. And so Trinity College moves to Durham, and you'll learn as I go forward, Washington Duke was ever more involved in that. You see, after Trinity College decided to move to Durham, Washington Duke got together with his buddy, Julian S. Carr, who is the namesake of the town of Carrboro. He was another tobacco magnate. And they gave up a bunch of their land as a location for the new school. So Trinity College, they moved there. And it's still a fairly small college, but Washington Duke gave them a lot of land. So did Julian S. Carr. So this smaller school was on this huge lot of land. Now, it wasn't long after the school got there, Washington Duke, he wanted to start letting women attend Trinity College. And I'm not sure the Methodist Church was really digging this idea, but when Washington Duke, who pretty much gave you the school, when he asked for something, you give it to him. And so in 1897, Trinity became a co-ed school. Now, it was a co-ed school, but these boys and girls, they didn't go to class together. The boys, their school was over here. The ladies' school was over there. And for 20 years, the school was thriving. And the school never did stop thriving. But 20 years, Now we're in the 1920s. That brings me to the next part of the show. Like I said, Trinity College was doing good, but it still wasn't this way up there with some of these, you know, Ivy League schools. I said Ivy League schools. But Trinity College gets a new president named William Few, and that was his goal. Almost immediately, he wanted to start competing with Yale and Harvard and really get up there with the Ivy League schools. Well, by this time, I think Washington Duke had been passed on, but his son, James Buchanan Duke, still a big part of Trinity College, he decided to, well, when Washington Duke died, he left his son a bunch of money, a huge inheritance. And so to help this guy, William Few, was that right? William Few reach his goals of making the school, you know, really elite, he decides to offer a lot of his daddy's inheritance or his inheritance to the school. And so he donates $19 million to Trinity College. And that's $19 million in 1920 money. So I didn't check this out or do the math before I started recording, but that's a ton of money. Well, with all this new money from the Duke family, they, as a way to say thank you, they changed the name of the college from Trinity College to Duke University. And they didn't just sit on the money for a long time. They went to work right away improving the college. Even up to a mile away, they started building new buildings, dorms, classrooms. And then James Duke donates about 5,000 acres of forest land on the farm to the school. And keep in mind, they're a tobacco family. You got to have fields. He had all these woods on his farm. You know, he could have tried to clear those woods to expand his fields, but he donated this 5,000 acres of woods to the school, and that would be the beginning of Duke Forest. In the 1930s, the original Trinity College site became the women's college at Duke. And of course, that was on the East Campus, the Trinity College part. So the East Campus was the women's school, and the West Campus, the newer stuff, that was the all-male college. In 1963, Duke became desegregated when students Mary Harris, Jean Kendall, Wilhelmina, Reuben Cook, Cassandra Smith Rush, and Nathaniel White enrolled at the university. Now, I talked about, you know, the school keeping the men and women separate. Men were on the west, women on the east, one way or the other. But that all changed in 1972 when they merged both colleges and started the College of Arts and Science, Arts and Sciences. Now, the College of Arts and Sciences, you know, if you don't understand, it's still all Duke College, but they have these different schools within the college. Arts and Sciences joined the School of Religion and Graduate School. Arts and Sciences joined the School of Religion and the Graduate School, which were both founded in 1926. I know that's a step in the back. Still in the back, the School of Medicine opened in 1930. The School of Nursing opened in 1931. And Duke Law School organized in 1930. And I'm assuming I meant to put that back in my notes to keep it in the actual timeline. So, you know, I don't get too dodgy, but we took a step back there. And we're still stepping back. In 1938, they opened up the Nicholas School of the Environment. And in 1939, the Pratt School of Engineering started. And getting closer to back on track, in 1969, the Fuqua School of Business opened up. And Duke got their 10th school in 2005 when they opened the Sanford School of Public Policy. And I'll be honest, the School of Public Policy doesn't sound very interesting at all, but, you know, teach their own. Duke Hospital, which I've been to several times, unfortunately, especially here lately, it opened up in 1980. And then, in 1994, they started construction on the Levine Science Research Center, or the LSRC. The following year, 1995, they started building the School of the Environment, which used to be the School of Forestry and the Duke Marine Lab. And I know that's a lot of dates, it may not have been that interesting, but as you can see, over the years, they're constantly adding more programs to the school. Now, before I wrap this show up, I want to talk about the Duke Blue Devils. And I used to make the joke, you know, I knew growing up that Duke had a, you know, was rooted in religion with the Methodist Church. So it's kind of funny that their mascot was the Blue Devils. You know, that doesn't seem like it fits with the Bible thumpers. You know, now we're going to call ourselves the Devils. But during this research, I ran across the origin story behind the Duke Blue Devils. So apparently, Duke University, yep, I guess it was Duke University at the time, yep, they banned football on campus, and they banned football for 25 years. No football allowed. Well, World War I comes and it goes, and the war didn't have anything to do with it, but after the war, that's when the trustees decided that maybe it's okay if they play football on campus again. Well, since they were cool with football again, they decided that the football team really needed a name. And so initially, they were known as the Trinity 11, the Blue and the White, or the Methodist. And the Methodists may actually sound derogatory, but Wake Forest University, they were called the Baptist. But they had this student newspaper called the Trinity Chronicle, and they decided to run a campaign to pick a whole new name. And so people started sending in suggestions. I read that some of the suggestions were the Grizzlies, the Badgers, the Catamounts, and which is weird, Western North Carolina is the Catamounts, the Dreadnoughts, and the Captains. There was the Blue Titans, the Blue Eagles, the Polar Bears, the Blue Devils, the Royal Blazes, and the Blue Warriors. But with all these suggestions, nobody could really pick a name. However, when Blue Devils was suggested, everybody started criticizing it, which is to be expected because it's a religious school. So everybody started raising hell about the name Blue Devils. Well, eventually, the editor-in-chief of the student newspaper, kind of to be facetious, everybody hated the name Blue Devils, so he unofficially started calling the football team the Blue Devils just to get a reaction out of people. And so the more they wrote about the athletics at Duke University, they just kind of kept calling them the Blue Devils. And eventually everybody just accepted that as the name of the team and the Duke mascot. And that's all I got on Duke University. When I went in, I thought this is going to be a really long episode, and it was certainly interesting. Like I said, you can go back and listen to my episode on NC Tobacco, and that'll kind of give you more about the Duke family. But that's Duke University. Thank you again, Ricky from Chapel Hill, for suggesting Duke. And again, thank all of you for listening. I think I have one more episode of the podcast before the end of the year. I may do a Christmas episode or some sort of Christmassy episode. I'm not sure. But if you get bored around the holidays or you want more NC Everything content, like I said, check out Tasting NC, a show where me and my wife taste everything that has anything to do with North Carolina. Check out the Facebook group. I've been really busy. I hadn't posted a lot, but a lot of my listeners, a lot of you guys post on there, and I love looking at your posts. And, you know, 115 past episodes now, or this will be 115, you could always go back to episode one and start over. I'm not going back to episode one to start over. I hope I have improved since then, but I'm not going to listen to episode one to find out how much I've improved or how bad it was at one time. But anyway, that's all I got. I'm not going to sit here and ramble just to get the video longer. You guys, I hope you're having happy holidays leading up to the holidays. I hope you're staying warm. This weather's getting kind of crazy. And y'all be safe, and I'll talk to you in a couple weeks.